This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Ugh. You said you were over him, but his hoodie is still in your rotation. It's time. Grab your phone, snap a few pics, and sell it on Depop. Listed in minutes, with no selling fees. And just like that, a guy 500 miles away just paid full price for your closure. And right on cue.
Hey, still got my hoodie?
Nope, but I've got tonight's dinner paid for. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. List now with no selling fees. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the No Low Ballers podcast. I'm Logan Medish of High Caliber History, your host, sitting around the table here with guys from Go Wild and Gunbroker.com. And today we are talking about black rifles and green eyes. So what are we talking about today, guys?
You know, I would say in the last 20 years, there is no more ubiquitous image of the U.S. military than that night vision footage, the guys jumping off the helos, goggles down, and again, black rifles, green eyes. Great book, by the way, by the late Tiger McGee of Shoot Right Academy, doctrine on it, but sidebar. So today we're going to talk about night vision and just its origins. It's another one of these brand new technologies that everyone thinks is gee whiz that goes back damn near 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of talk about what that means. And also there's a lot of confusion about night vision versus thermal and, you know, what they all do. And at the end of the day, everyone wants to be the predator. It doesn't always quite work that way.
Yes, doesn't always quite work that way. And well, I guess it could work that way. You're just gonna have to shell out a ton of money. Like,
if you're
a small country, you might have the budget to view things the way the Predator did. But I don't think any of us sitting around the table. I think even if we all pooled our money together,
I get it. The Predator, the alien movie.
Yeah, we're not talking about like coyotes.
I thought you were talking about Predator drones.
Oh, that would have been interesting too. Yeah.
Also requires a small amount of money.
Yeah. We could be a small country in and of ourselves.
So, you know, what we think of as night vision, you know, is kind of usually the helmet mounted flip down monoculars or binocular type things, but it actually dates back to World War II. A little bit different, though. That was really more of an infrared system. It was almost an infrared camera, and it required an illuminator to go with it. So these weren't things that the troops would carry with them. They weren't even really weapon-mounted. I mean, they were usually used in guard towers or mounted on vehicles, because the illuminator was big. IR light doesn't throw very far, big battery packs to run it. mainly used in sentry positions, just keeping an eye on the perimeter, that sort of thing. But it began the U.S. military's look at how do we own the night and how do we see into the night. And for the better part of the 20th century, that's something that the American military and our allies have done better than anybody. A big lesson from Vietnam was we did not own the night, and that was something that the military has made a very conscious effort since then to make sure that we can dominate. Which actually brings us to kind of what we think of as really the first true generation of night vision. That would be the Starlight Scope.
Yep.
If you've seen images of these, they were usually in special groups or for special purpose missions, and these were monstrosities.
It looks like you took a giant spotlight, flashlight, and put it on steroids and mounted it up top.
And oddly enough, usually on an M1 carbine.
Let's take a gigantic light and put it on a small gun, because that's...
A lot of that was the range. And the way that the Starlight Scope's different from the World War II infrareds, they were more passive. They would amplify the light, so they didn't need an external source. The easiest way that I can describe light amplification, there's a lot of science in this, and I'm a degree in journalism, so I'm going to muck that up. But if you think about the sonar system on like a boomer, you know, missile submarine, one of the most sensitive microphones out there, it's picking up every tiny little sound, and it translates that into an electronic signal, which then shows up on a display where your highly trained sonar technician is listening. So that's kind of how the first half of a night vision scope works. It's taking in every little photon of light, be it no matter how faint it is. If there's one photon, it'll come in and hits a receptor sheet. From there, it detects that, it turns that into an electronic signal. Now, let's go back to our submarines. So you've got the sonar technician, he sees a little blip on his screen, he hears something in his headset, and he starts beating on a drum. Every time he hears Vasily, give me one ping and one ping only, he hits a drum to go along with it. So he's amplifying what he's hearing. And that's basically what's happening here, is it takes that electronic signal that it's detected on a very sensitive plate, and basically says, we need you to light up a similar pixel here, but stronger. So what you really see, everyone thinks these are scopes that light passes through like a traditional optic, and it's really not. It's a miniaturized camera, kind of, because the electronic signal that the photo plate picks up then gets translated into an image that you see. And typically it's used on green phosphor, which is why it glows green. There's a couple of reasons for it. Green phosphor works really well for it. It is a little more cost-effective. Green also doesn't wreck the... comparative, it's still cost effective, and it doesn't wreck the night vision as badly as say a bright white light would be. Also gives you a little bit better depth. So the Gen 1 Starlight Scope did that to a certain extent. Then Gen 2 got a little more sensitive. Where we're sitting at these days with Generation 3 is exceptionally sensitive. We'll talk about some other advances they've made, but kind of going back, Gen 1 is that, like I said, that Starlight Scope. You can still pick these up for probably a couple $100. A lot of companies will make them. Bushnell does, ATN, a few others. They're generally monoculars, and they're generally good for fun. You know, you can take them camping, have a little bit of fun with them. They don't have a ton of reach. They certainly don't have a ton of depth. You get what you pay for, with night vision especially. Gen 2, you don't see a lot of domestically produced anymore. Where you see that flood in is the Soviet surplus market, because in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, tons of used Russian night vision hit markets. It's better than Gen 1, still not that great. Really, Gen 3 is where we start to get to that point that people kind of think of today. And it still has its limitations, which can be somewhat restrictive in a military or hunting environment, but can also be friggin' hilarious if you're just watching. For example, you have no depth perception in these at all.
No.
In fact, the focus, if I want to look at Dan, I have to dial in and focus on him, but then if I want to look down the hallway, I have to readjust it manually. So what you'll find, especially in really low light situations like house clearing, we were doing a class once using night vision to do CQB in a house. And it was hilarious watching guys reaching for doorknobs and like being, and I mean, you're sitting off to the side and you know they're this far away from it, but they just have zero depth perception whatsoever. Watching these giant steps because they think they're going to trip over the couch, which is over there. It's funny. And, you know, this gets, you know, exaggerated with a monocular. Binoculars make it a little bit better. The quad sets you see, especially pilots of you know, some of the rescue helicopters, make it a little bit better. But at the end of the day, you're still trying to take in a 3D world through a 1D screen. So
yeah, and you see a lot of that even with the rifle scopes that are that way. You know, I was hog hunting in Texas back in June, and thankfully the scope I was using had a built-in range finder on it, because you're looking through that and you're like, how far away is that? Like, I can't tell you how far away that is, just on that singular plane of that, you know. Turns out it was 76 yards, you know, but as you're looking through it, I'm like, I couldn't tell you how far away that feeder is, you know. And you don't think about it, because normally, you know, you think you look through a scope and you can kind of tell, well, yeah, that deer is 100 yards or 150, you know, but I'm looking through it on that screen, I'm like, I have no idea how far away that is.
So using that technology in a military situation seems pretty problematic if the depth perception is off that much.
You can train a little bit out of that. So, you know, the guys that run it day in, day out and train hard on it, it gets a little bit better. At the end of the day, even as your depth perception's a little bit off, if you can see in the dark and your enemy can't, it's a massive mm-hmm. advantage. So, it, you know, it's really been the trademark of the U.S. military for 20 plus years to own the night. You know, if you think about the Battle of Mogadishu, one of the biggest problems we had is, since it was a daytime op, most of the guys didn't take their night vision with them.
Yep.
The Delta boys did, the Rangers didn't. And when it ended up being a day-long event that went into the nighttime hours, so much of the doctrine that the Rangers had trained and practiced on went out the window because they didn't have that advantage. So, you know, night vision has become an absolute critical part of the military side. The one that gets me are the SOAR pilots, the Special Operations Rescue and Drop-Off pilots. Flying these things in the areas they do, as tight as they do, with you know, the goggles on, I can't even imagine it.
Yeah, you want to talk about some serious training time that goes into that.
And what I don't understand is how the helicopters get off the ground with the weight of those pilots' large brass cojones as well, because those guys are absolutely incredible.
You just hear them clanging as they're flying.
There you go. Yeah. So that's... The advantage in hunting, you know, obviously comes into play, and now we've, of course, got a lot of legality disclaimers that we probably need to throw in here, too. Night vision for a lot of game animals is illegal to spotlighting. This is one of the reasons why hog hunting, you know, is such a great thing to do, because mm-hmm. it's really pest control, and that's where you can start to have fun with some of these toys as well. I will tell you, a set of binoculars and a laser illuminator on your rifle is... so much fun. I mean, even just shooting targets, it doesn't feel real. The world in night vision is just so small, it feels like a video game.
That's a great way to put it, too.
So it is insanely fun. Probably the biggest conversation point we have around night vision is the difference between it and thermal, because I think people tend to lump the two together quite often.
Yeah.
And they're two different things with different purposes, and they both have their own limitations. So,
definitely, yeah. And I think that's the confusion that a lot of people have, and the disappointment that a lot of people have with the price points and stuff, because, you know, they see the price point for a lot of the night vision stuff, and they're like, oh my gosh, it's so incredibly expensive. Like, yeah, it is. But then they see something else, you know, at like a $600 price point, and they're like, oh man, I can get into it for that. Be like, well, no, we're changing definitions of what we've got here, you know, and...
The different generations definitely and have way different price points, but way different performance as well. And, you know, as you and I were talking before we started here, Jacob, you've got some experience using the newest night vision, which we talked about how green phosphor is used right now. The latest greatest has transitioned to a white phosphor, which, you know, no pun intended, but it is like night and day between the two optics.
Yeah, I have actually never used green phosphor. The only experience I have with it is photos and videos that I've seen. So we were out doing a shoot in the middle of nowhere, North Carolina, and at night it's so dark out there, like it's the darkest dark you can imagine. So one of the guys that's with us gets out his white phosphor. We start putting it on, playing around with them, and I'm looking, having conversations with people, and it was unreal to me how crisp of an image they were mm-hmm. as I'm standing there talking to them. Like they can barely see me because there's a little bit of ambient light from the garage, but it is so crisp, so clear. The stars are just lit up, you know, you see stuff going, you know, satellites or whatever going by. It's crazy to me that one, I can't afford to have one because it was that neat, but two, just how, I wasn't expecting it to be that crisp and clean of an image.
Yeah, white phosphor almost gives a, like a black and white movie look to it. So yeah. It's that crisp. It's almost like real life, as opposed to, you know, kind of the video game where everything's got a green tint, you know, eyes are black, and, you know, it has a strange look under a green phosphor. But we did a similar event at the High Bar Homestead up by Gillette a few years ago, where this set came from. And we had these veterans, we had some SWAT snipers, we had some military snipers who, you know, sleep in night vision, and they got the white phosphor for the first time, and they're all just sitting there staring up at the sky, just taking in all the stars, because they're just absolutely gobsmacked by the performance of it. And you don't really understand the whole concept of Carl Sagan's billions and billions of stars until you've looked up at the sky wearing a good set of night vision. And it's crazy how much is up there that we just can't see with our own eye, but these things can amplify and find.
And, you know, not only that, but you think about the implications between what the military has access to and what we have access to, you know, and usually there's a bit of a lag in there, you know, by the time we're allowed to get it. And so you can only imagine what the military grade technology is with that stuff now, if the white phosphor that we have available to us is so incredibly clear. Incredibly crisp and clear. I mean, that's a game changer in and of itself, right? You know, but to think what is up and coming in the next generation of stuff, you find yourself wondering, how could it get any more, you know, amazing? It was kind of like when we ended up with all the flat screen TVs, and everyone's like, oh, this is great. And then 4K came out, and you're like, how did I live with 1080p, you know?
Or even GPS that you said, you know, there was a margin of error built into it, so you weren't getting as accurate. And then that's just become more and more fine-tuned to now your Apple iTag is within a few feet of where it says it is. But, looking at Nod's night vision versus thermal, you know, the biggest difference with night vision is it's passive, so it's taking what it brings in and amplifies it, and it's seeing natural light. So it really only works at night. You know, I've got the cover on it here so that the sensitive plates up front aren't just going to be damaged sitting here turned off under lights. Where thermal works 24 hours a day, and that was probably one of the biggest misconceptions I kept hearing about it, was everyone thought it was a nighttime device only. With thermal, what it's looking for is it doesn't care about light, it's looking for temperatures and temperature variations. And what that, again, it's essentially a camera, and it's what it's looking for is variations between the temperatures, which it then translates into an image that, because of the way it works, kind of looks like a human if we're looking at it.
Yeah.
So it can work in the middle of the day, but obviously nighttime, the temperature variances are usually bigger. So if you get a 40-degree night and a 98-degree person, it really stands out. A 98-degree person on a 95-degree day, everything kind of looks pinkish and red.
That's why when I went hog hunting, I was telling a friend in Tennessee, and he's like, well, how are you able to use it? He's like, Tennessee in June is so incredibly hot. How are you going to be able to see the difference? I'm like, well, believe it or not, you know, body temperatures, even of animals, it's going to be different than the surrounding environment, you know, and you'll be able to see it. And I think the big misconception with, you know, thermal, we can't use it during the daytime. I think we have Hollywood and TV shows to blame for that, because that's when you're seeing people using the thermal stuff in all the TV shows and things. It's always at night. You never see someone using it during the day. And I think that's where a lot of that misconception comes from.
You know, with thermal, the advantage is we use it a lot as a game tracker. So they're not, again, the legality varies around the country, but as far as using them as a tool to find game and hunt game, usually not really legal. Finding game that you've shot and
recovery, absolutely.
Much more legality there. They're great for finding blood trails. They're great for finding downed animals. We're working with an optics company that launched a thermal monocular, and we were doing a media hunt as part of it, and it was a predator hunt. And someone shot a coyote. We knew exactly where it was. We marked it, watched it go down. We knew. We ranged it. Four of us walked out there, and an hour later, we still couldn't find the damn thing. Someone pulled out the thermal, and it was about 14 steps to the left of where we were looking.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's that simple. You know. So thermal will give you a little bit of residue behind from the footsteps or somebody's touched something. You can kind of – anywhere heat can radiate, it can detect, where with night vision, it's kind of like right now. If I can't actually see it, I can't actually see it. So the idea of cover and concealment is kind of different. Thermal you can't use through glass. You know, if you're driving along, you can't look out the window. Night vision, again, unless you have some sort of illuminator that's giving you glare.
I have never thought about that, that you couldn't use thermal through glass. Well, it makes sense now,
right?
But I would have never thought about that before.
So with this product launch, I was trying to test it out and get a feel for how well it worked. So my wife and I went out into the country, and we're driving around up around her father-in-law's farm, and it's 9 or 10 o'clock at night, and it's a pretty cool night, or a pretty warm night, and we're going along. She wanted to drive by an old country graveyard, So we're going by this old cemetery, and I'm going by slow, and I have the pickup window down. Well, what I see coming is a gas pipeline head. You know, you've seen them. They're natural gas pipeline. Well, of course, that's also probably about 40 degrees on this 80-degree night. And she's just fixated on this, trying to see if any, you know, tombstones are hot or cold or whatever. And all of a sudden, this big robotic, you know, structure thing pops up in bright white on the screen. She almost threw it out the window. So you can have some fun with it, too.
The thing that I think is really cool about them, and I'm sure, it, like most things, it varies in quality of how well you can see this, but looking at an image of a hog and the thermal signature that's coming from individual hairs and the detail that even some of those pick up is really cool to me. I mean, it's like you almost – I think going into that stuff, okay, it's going to be a blob, it's going to be moving, that kind of thing, but – the heat signature and that those things are sensitive enough to pick up, and you can see such a detailed picture in some of them is really cool.
Now, this is my opinion, so feel free to jump in the comments and tell me how wrong I am, but I think between the two.
Dear Alan.
Between the two, if you're looking for a product that's probably a little more affordable, probably a little more useful, and certainly probably a little more state regulation friendly, I think thermal wins out over over night vision.
Especially hunting.
Especially hunting.
Yes.
Especially hunting, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. And, you know, plug for the Go Wild store. You know, if guys are looking for
a wide variety.
Yep, exactly. At all different price points, whether you're looking to get in it for the first time or you're looking to upgrade, you know, there's.
Yeah. And it's if you have sticker shock, looking at some of the ones that are recommended to be the best and that kind of stuff, but you want to get one that's lower price, just know, like, there's a difference. There's a reason the other ones are more expensive.
Right.
So when you take it out of the box and look at it, and it's not the perfect one.
Right.
You know, you are sacrificing a little bit on that quality of that image, but still, it's great stuff.
But I don't think we sell any night vision on site that I can think of as far as phosphor night vision.
I don't think so.
Yeah. I'm guessing you can get some on GunBroker.
You can indeed. And again, the price points are all over the place. You know, to your point, I was one of those, you know, when I was a little less experienced, found a clearance monocular, and it took me 15 minutes after I opened it to figure out, oh, it doesn't even take batteries. It's got a little kind of pump thing you do that just charges the phosphor screen. And I was completely disappointed. It's like, this is, you know, my field of view is nothing. It's very dim. The illuminator's a joke. I felt very kind of ripped off. You know, knowing what I know now, it was, you know, obvious. I mean, what did I expect for $129, you know? But
well, don't go into it thinking you're going to get military spec that you've seen online with what you can afford.
Yeah, basically, if you've got Camry money, you're not getting a Corvette, you know?
Yeah. Well, and at the end of the day, there's nothing necessarily wrong with those. You just have to know what you're getting and what you want it for.
Yeah.
And night vision has a half-life, or it can go bad over time, right?
It can. Again, the plate is... there's a very electro something, 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 we'll just call it the plate, that detects the photons when it hits it is insanely sensitive, and they do eventually fade out. So, you know, you've got a shelf life on some of these things. You know, if you take care of them, they last quite a while, but, you know, they are, you know, somewhat of a consumable product that way, which, you know, you really hate to think about when you think about the cost of some of them.
And the other thing is, and kind of going with people's unrealistic expectations who think they're going to take this on the apocalypse, and this is thermal as well, they chew through batteries, right?
The night vision itself's not bad. When I turn the illuminator on, that's when you start to see it go down pretty quickly. Thermal's about the same as what I would, you know, you'd compare to your modern xenon flashlights, so...
Yeah, so
10 to 20 hours on a something.
Yeah, so one night in the apocalypse, if this is your apocalypse gun, you're good for the first night, and then if you don't have extra batteries or a way to recharge.
Yeah, I have often sat up and just stared at the ceiling trying to contemplate the supply chain of keeping all of our troops overseas in batteries and what that's got to be like. Because, I mean, you're thinking with their life, these guys are probably going through a set a day. I mean, this takes one AA, so it's
when
not
you're
exactly.
carrying the backups to the backups.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
and I mean, that's a single setup. So, I mean, the guys with the double, okay, so now you're into two batteries. If you're one of the really special guys that get the four set, now you're into a four. They do make battery packs that mount on the back of your helmet that give you a much longer battery life, rechargeable, a little bit of weight there, which is another consideration that I think people don't really fully understand. This is a bump helmet, so it's plastic. It's really just designed to, like I said, bump your head. I mainly use it as a mount for the monocular. And the monocular is not light. But if you add this to a proper ballistic helmet, I mean, you're now getting into a fairly sizable chunk on top of your head that projects way up and throws your center of gravity off. The neck strength it requires to wear these day in, day out, like some of our troops do, it's staggering to think about.
And if you get a monocular, you don't have to put it on a helmet. You could weapon mount it behind a red dot or something.
Yeah, you're probably going to want one that's designed for that because it'll take the recoil and be a little more ruggedized. Because I'm a poor boy, I only have a monocular instead of a binocular. I have mine set up my dominant eye, which is the left side, with the idea being I can run a red dot on low power. And by shooting with both eyes open, it's going to superimpose the dot onto my night vision image. Or I just flip the switch on my IR laser and don't care.
Cool.
So the illuminator, give me the scenarios of when you would use the illuminator versus not.
Well, for using it, if you're in a place that has no light, so you're in a basement two stories down, absolutely no light whatsoever, night vision doesn't work. So you flip your illuminator on for that.
Okay.
If you were, say, doing a grab and go, you're in the enemy's headquarters or whatever, and you're trying to grab documents, you might turn it on to have a better look at what you're looking at.
Is this a visible light?
It's IR as well.
Okay.
Here's the upside downside. The upside is now suddenly you can see better. The downside is that only works if you're the only person wearing night vision. Because if your opponent's got night vision as well, even if it's maybe a generation back Russian surplus, and you turn the illuminator on, it's like turning on a flashlight, you know, that you can see. So
it's like the locator beacons that you say with the, you know, the military put out. You know, they're not expecting the jihadis to have the ability to see. Well, maybe now with the $86 billion of equipment we left behind, or however much it was. But you know, 2 years ago, that wasn't an issue.
Just lunch money.
Just lunch money. And even the illuminator on the unit itself is not spectacularly stout. So hence the I've got the side mounted light that also has an IR setting to it. I can go red, white, or infrared with that as well to help. But you don't think about. I mean, it's an entirely different world. I know I kind of said that before, but the things that reflect infrared light is kind of staggering. You know, there's been kind of the joke in the industry about certain camo patterns light up under night vision and some don't. And, just weird things that pop here and there that you don't expect to see that are suddenly super, super bright. I have Arlo security cameras around my house, and they all have little IR illuminators. So to sit in the backyard and suddenly see this giant bright stream of light come on, and you're like, what, nothing happened? Because, of course, that's what most of us with night vision do. We just go and walk around our house in the middle of the night in the dark because, it is. It's really,
like boys I said, with their toys.
Well, you got to think about, play with them. Yeah, at the end of the day, when we're talking about the price point and what you need to get into, you think about your use for it. If you want to take it camping and have fun, which I highly recommend, they're super fun things to have when camping. You can get away with some of those lesser expensive ones. If you do want to use it for a hunting perspective, certainly you're going to want to make more investment. If you're going to weapon mount it, you really need one built for that, and the price comes with that. If you're building up your shit hits the fan scenario and you want one, then you're probably going with something a little higher end as well. And, you know, like I said, we've got all price points across the board available, both through Go Wild and Gun Broker for thermal and night vision.
And night vision is not federally. I know it's export regulated, but any civilian can buy it without a ATF.
Yep, it's ITAR regulated for the technology, but beyond that, anybody with the funds can buy it. Sometimes, and I'm guessing these days it's getting to that point, finding a supply can be tough sometimes. There's not a lot of manufacturers of the tubes. There's about three of them out there, and then every company builds their sets around that. So as long as L3 Harris is churning out product, you can find them, but if they're being tied up in a contract somewhere, they can sometimes be a little trickier.
Well, I know a guy that's got a pretty sweet set. If anybody here wants some, he told me the price, and I immediately gave them back.
What was the price?
You took two hands and very gently.
85?
100?
That's honestly not as bad as I was thinking.
Green, you can cut that for a binocular set. For green, you probably cut that in half, but, you know, it's still a pretty healthy investment. At least with this set, I got a really nice flimsy nylon pouch to put them in. So
I have zero need for that. Like, it would literally just be, I have money, I'm mad at.
But it's not about need. Like, there's so much of the stuff in the gun world and things that we do. Like, what do you need that for? Like, who said anything about need, you know?
So. And I imagine they lose their value more than a gun investment. Yeah. You know, if a couple generations go by and all of a sudden it's not worth nearly as much as you paid for it. So
it's like anything technological. It gets lighter. It gets more energy efficient. It gets even, you hear of Gen 4, which right now is a marketing term. There really isn't no fourth generation. It's just refinements on the third gen. So,
yeah.
But like with anything
it
tech.
It is fun. Very fun stuff.
It is fun. Definitely fun. And what else is fun? Sitting around the table with all you guys and talking about this stuff. We hope you all had fun watching and listening this episode. Again, if you're looking to pick some of this stuff up, if you have money, as Jacob said, money that you're mad at, you can certainly throw it at the Go Wild store. Or
maybe you sold a bunch of stuff on GunBroker and you got money in the pocket.
There you go. Could be. So we appreciate you tuning into the episode. Leave us some comments, some reviews. Make sure you're subscribed. And we appreciate you being here. And we will see you again next week on the next episode of the No Low Ballers podcast.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.